This is disc two of the Fellowship of the Ring Special Extended Edition. This is Yahoo's with a microphone. Right here, we're about to see a newly added scene. Adds a little more depth to the Aragorn character, the dilemma.
Aragorn's mother's grave. Mm-hmm. Which I was profoundly intrigued when I, you know.
Can't remember. Is this scene in the book? I don't think so. I think it is.
Again, it's been a while since I read the book.
I don't remember it in the book, but it's been about a year or so since I've read this part, so.
Yeah, they do talk about the sword, you know, being forged.
Yeah, that is mentioned in the book. I remember that, and we still haven't seen it, actually. I'm wondering when we're going to see it. Probably in the extended edition of Two Towers, but you never know. This is from the book.
Yeah.
Sting. That she gets in The Hobbit. And gets the Mithril vest in The Hobbit too, doesn't he?
No. Oh, him? Yeah.
Bilbo?
That's my name, Bilbo. Yeah.
Bilbo, this is what I'm talking
about. No, I wasn't talking about Frodo. I know he gets in here, because... Now, this effect coming up is, I'll admit, if there's a cheesy effect in this entire movie, it probably is, but this one coming up, it's, a nice little mini scare.
Yeah. I didn't think it was cheesy. I was really, thrown off by was hearing that they'd spent all this time on a Ian Holm lookalike, kind of like a puppet of Ian Holm, and it's on screen for they put all this time and detail into an Ian Holm puppet. Animatronic, I guess, and it's on the screen for less than a second.
Right.
Yeah.
And I don't see why they couldn't have just done that with a computer more. Mm-hmm. That's just something kind of makes me laugh when I think about it.
But that scene is sort of in the book. I mean, he does get a little excited about the little thing.
Everybody else. Yeah, they don't mention dwarves. Come in just a minute.
Let me look at it one more time. This is one of my favorite pieces of new music right here. Mm-hmm.
I like this little bit by Elijah Wood here. A little bit of business here.
Yeah, I wonder if the additional music will ever be available to purchase or not.
I'm hoping they're waiting for, a box set, six disc box set of the entire series music.
That'd be great.
I would put down for it. I would very much put down for it. I love this music.
And now this is some scale levels right there. Mm-hmm. I mean, the fact of the matter is that you can tell.
Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Again, it doesn't throw me out of the movie. Mm-hmm. It doesn't throw me out of the movie at all. But hero shot.
Yep. Used in the original teaser. Probably shot specifically for the original teaser.
It's very appropriate.
Yeah.
you really do get a good buzz out of this on the scene.
God, that is fantastic.
He did a lot of helicopter shooting on this. I mean, that's the only way you could do some of these shots. I mean, her blimp, and it's like, no.
I mean, I wonder how he picks from such great scenery. You know, he can shoot anywhere, and it needs to be great.
I mean, he scouted like crazy. He scouted like crazy. I mean, you know, one of the experts on the theatrical DVD, you know, when they're talking about the Two Towers, they're talking about Rohan and Edoras. You know, I mean, they basically scoured the entire landscape looking for just the right place.
Right.
It's like, this is where it's got to be. So.
Mm. Oh, that'd be great to have that as my job.
Oh, yeah.
And we're establishing some elvish characteristics here with, you know, Legolas having the ability to kind of have super hearing, super...
For the dwarf not knowing what the heck it is.
The roof of clouds! Or maybe not.
Homage to the Birds by Hitchcock.
Was this not out of the book?
I think it is.
Oh, yeah, yeah, it is.
But the way it's staged, I'm sure, is an homage to Hitchcock.
Right.
That's very much the Birds.
All right.
that's the only way you can look at it, I think. But yeah, it is in the book that way. Some of the camera shots in this just look absolutely impossible. I mean, the combination of all these different cinematic elements is just extraordinary. I mean, this is probably, when it comes to cinematic techniques, it's probably one of the most important films ever made. I mean, you know, it's right up there with, like, Birth of a Nation and Citizen Kane and Star Wars.
This is kind of like a Citizen Kane-ish kind of image right here, I think.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
the close-up of the ring and the
actually, ring.
Does that not strike you as Citizen Kane-ish?
Right? I can see it.
Yeah.
I can see it. I never really thought that association, but yeah. It's. I mean, just the use of deep focus in this movie in general.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, deep focus was something that became huge after Citizen Kane. He experimented with it a ton in that movie, and it really came into its own on that film, and there's a lot of great uses of it in this movie as well. So, I mean, this is everything that's come before this movie has inspired it in some way. You know? Major milestone in cinema has inspired this in some way or another. In addition to the work of Tolkien, I mean, you know, it's the only way you could look at another chance where you get the antagonism between Boromir and Aragorn.
Yep.
And, I mean, this is one of those shots where it's like, how the hell did they do this? I mean, such fluidity is in this camera or in these camera shots. It's just extraordinary. And the moving from the different types of effects is just amazing.
And the foul voice in the air. This is all on stage, but it really does look like they're out there in the audience.
Yeah. It looks pretty real.
I love the music here. I love the music for Karakas on this. And it's actually very subtly hinted at again in the introduction to the Two Towers. which I thought was an extraordinarily clever bit of business, really showed how much care was going to go into the soundtracks by Shore.
Yeah, I like the showing of the duality here between the two.
Yeah.
That's really, really done well. You didn't quite get that sense in the book, but they make that happen here.
Well, I mean, in the book, it's all basically honed from the Fellowship's point of view.
Right, exactly.
So you don't see Saruman's point of view.
Right.
You know, I mean, the things with the parts with him creating the Urukai,
yep,
completely invented. I mean, none of those scenes are in the book. So,
well, it's in that he's it's acknowledged in the book that he cross breeds orcs with goblins, is it not?
Is.
Yeah.
But I mean, you don't see the actual creation of the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically it. Just completely drenched in snow. If there's anybody's voice who benefits more from reverb in a good way,
right,
than Christopher Lee's,
exactly.
I mean, it just bellows with reverb. Like, good lord. I noticed that in the first big scene in Isengard with him. Dang.
Yeah, throw it off on me.
Well, that makes his choice easier.
Exactly. It's like, wait a second, I'm a hobbit.
I mean, that wasn't in the theatrical version, that little line by Boromir.
Is it not?
No.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Again, I mean, it's been such a considerable amount of time since I've seen the theatrical version.
You know, I've seen the theatrical version so many times, and I've seen this one so many times. It's been a while since I've seen the theatrical version, too, but I'm so familiar with both versions that it's like, yeah. I mean, this part is new between Frodo and Gandalf. A lot of this stuff is in.
Yeah.
To the movie. And it fleshes out. Because this scene is fleshed out in the book more.
Yeah. I mean, even before the movie started coming out and the story started gaining as much popularity as it has now, for some reason this image of the gates outside of the Mines of Moria is kind of something that I think I've seen before, you know, from artwork, from books, and, you know,
mm-hmm.
I think, if I'm not mistaken, Tolkien designed the artwork, you know, or the imagery of the outside of Moria.
I'm not quite sure about that, possibly.
Well, I think, you know, at least he designed the door. I think that was...
Yeah, isn't there, depending on which version of the book you get, isn't there a picture?
Yeah. I've got a version of the book with it, with a picture in there, and it looks exactly like this.
I mean, really, I think that was something that, or it could just be an urban myth, but I mean, I really thought I heard that Tolkien himself designed the
I'll believe it. I I was really worried when I finally read The Two Towers because I was so worried that they had... I mean, Merry and Pippin in this book are essentially comic relief.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
I mean, they're basically the C-3PO and R2-D2 of this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that's basically their purpose, at least so it seems. Anybody who's read the book knows differently.
Right.
And so, when I finally read The Two Towers, I was so worried that they had, dumbed these characters down so much to where I was wondering how they were going to get to the places that they did at the end of The Two Towers.
Right.
And I was, it's one of those things where it's like, I don't know why I ever got Peter Jackson because he did it. He brought these characters to the exact place as far as maturity that they are in the books, and I was real impressed with that, and can't wait to see them in The Return of the King, because I love where their stories go in that movie, in that book. So...
Fabled hospitality of the dwarves.
Yeah.
The tomb. Goblins.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I thought I heard, in the director commentary that the Watcher, for some reason, is looking for the ring. Or that, he has some sense that Frodo has the ring. And that's why he...
I think it just goes to that thing that Gandalf mentions to Frodo, in the scene when they just get to the Wall of Moria, that it's like evil would be drawn to you from outside the Fellowship and from it within because of the ring. I mean, I do remember him talking about that, but, and I can't remember if that was ever implied in the book with the Watcher in the water, but, I do remember that being said in one of the commentaries, and
well, that probably makes more sense now because of the added material.
Yeah.
He's so happy about it, too.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, he looks thrilled.
He's like, oh, great.
I'm going to let these guys talk me into this. I mean, even in a mine, there's scope in this movie.
Yep.
Just absolutely extraordinary. I mean, every inch of the screen is filled.
Mm-hmm.
And just, I mean...
Well, how did Bilbo come into all this material in The Hobbit?
I can't remember. I don't think I've gotten up to that point.
I won't say it. Okay. I won't mention it.
Well, actually, it is sort of mentioned in this part.
Yeah.
In some of this new added material.
Okay.
Which is actually in the book.
Right.
Oh,
But, you know, I think one of the more interesting aspects of the added material is that it's not all just all the added material. It's not all just, you know, character moments, which is, you know, a lot of the time what is usually taken out of, you know, a conventional film is just, you know, character moments. You know, they usually will leave a lot of the bigger effects and images in the finished product, but that enormous miniature there of the Mitra mine was part of the new material, and I thought that was really profoundly interesting that, you know, this, it wasn't just the small moments, it wasn't just the character moments, it just adds to the depth, I think, of...
Well, see, it's also... See, the thing is, though, it's like that is part, is related to a character moment, too. So, I mean, that's to, you know, there are no gratuitous shots added into this, you know, no show-off shots, basically.
Nothing, yeah.
You know, like just showing off, oh, look what we can do.
Yeah.
I mean,
I'm hungry.
Again, they did a great job in teasing us on Gollum.
Yep.
Yeah, this is the dialogue that was saying is earlier in the movie, in the book, is in that first thing where Gandalf is telling Frodo about the ring.
Yeah.
This scene was done with Force perspective.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, I just remember not necessarily being completely lost the first time I saw this, but, you know, being a little thrown by how underdeveloped the character of Gollum is in the first film. And, of course, in the theatrical version, you weren't given this much history.
Yeah.
Or depth. This much depth was not given to the story of Gollum, formerly known as Smeagol.
And that's part why you really need to watch this before you watch the Two Towers, because there were moments that are in the Two Towers that directly relate to new material given in the special edition of Fellowship. That Smeagol being one of those things.
The reference to Smeagol.
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting to see a completely computer-generated character in these films.
Really,
I was not expecting that.
I mean, I was wondering how they were going to do it.
Free bear.
Yeah.
I mean, there's almost no other way you could do that.
Right. Well, I mean, me being totally, you know, not this. Well, I guess I could say clueless to is where this story was going to go. I just had no idea that this was, you know, I knew this was going to be somewhat of an effects-driven film, but at the same time, I didn't think that, you know, any characters that had as much resonance as Gollum does would be computer-generated, you know, let alone Treebeard, or, which, you know, I mean, but the Two Towers, it's just absolutely exciting just to think about where the Two Towers went with character development and with the, you know, the characters of Treebeard and Gollum.
Mm-hmm. This right here is just one of those truly awe-inspiring moments that you only get from the best of epics. At least visually speaking.
Right.
I mean, this is just extraordinary to look at.
There's an opener for me.
I mean, I gotta agree with Sam on that. Coupled with the music by Shore.
How much work would it take to make something like that?
Well, I think it's just like the bottoms of the pillars.
No. I'm thinking in terms of like the book or what have you. I mean, it'd be insane.
Yeah.
So I believe throughout the entire film that's Johnny Savings there, even though that's obviously a scale double from behind. Because he absorbed that character.
Mm-hmm.
Or should I say the character absorbed him. Not to say that Elijah and Sean and Billy and Dominique didn't.
Balin, he was in The Hobbit too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess I'll have to read The Hobbit now.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's easily the most accessible.
Yeah.
Out of any of the books.
If you want to start off reading Tolkien, that's the best place to start.
Right, because I mean, that
don't do what I did, start reading Fellowship.
Oh, did you start with Fellowship?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that idea. Oh, yeah.
No offense, Professor Tolkien, wherever you are, but
yeah.
Oh, yeah. Hobbit's the way to go.
Well, I mean, I've talked to some Tolkien fans, and The Hobbit is, you know, isn't necessarily their favorite.
I mean, it's not nearly on as grand a scale as this is. It's more intimate.
Uh-huh.
I still enjoy it.
Why am I reminded of that scene in the Holy Grail? Holy Grail. What was that?
Last Crusade?
No.
Monty Python.
Monty Python, the Holy Grail.
That's what I was afraid of.
And the Monty Python, the Holy Grail. The scene where they're reading the hieroglyphics.
Because of Peter's off. Exactly.
I know. They're coming.
So we've mentioned Armageddon, The Matrix, and Monty Python, and The Holy Grail. Don't worry, we have some more obscure, even more obscure references. Oh, and Citizen Kane.
Yeah.
Don't worry, we've got some even more obscure references for you coming up.
A little bit of Indiana Jones.
Well, it's not as obscure because it's an adventure film.
Uh huh. It also has
Monty Python.
Also has the great Chinese tables.
Yeah.
I wonder what's about to happen.
Big ass action sequence, which admittedly I thought was pretty confusingly edited
at first.
But it like the pacing at the beginning of this movie, it really just gets better the more you watch it. Now, it's really interesting to listen to the Peter Jackson and company talk about the philosophy of developing this cave troll. And it's probably one of the things that makes me most excited to realize that they're probably not going to screw up King Kong, because they tried to make this cave troll as sympathetic a character as possible, in the sense of, you know, he's sort of an unwitting accomplice in this.
That's a good point.
Doesn't necessarily deserve to be.
That's a good point.
So that really, the fact that they even thought that out and really shows how much care they have for these quote unquote monsters. I mean, the development of Gollum in Two Towers, which we talked about, which Ron talked about there, it's one of those things where, I mean, you can't help but get excited about the possibility of Peter Jackson directing King Kong. I mean, you really can get excited about it.
Yeah, that wasn't in the theatrical version. I mean, there are bits and pieces of action in here that was added to pretty good effect, I think.
This is a sweet move right here.
Yeah. Excuse us for not talking a lot during this.
One of the things that a lot of fantasy readers, fantasy novel readers, always talk about is the fact that elves never miss.
Yeah.
I think the only time I've really seen an elf miss is in some of the Dragonlance Chronicles in the first book.
Huh. Now, this scene is a bit more expanded than in the book.
Oh, yeah.
So
is Catherine
Doom, too.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this all the major points of the fight in the book,
yeah.
This is still hit. Frodo again being picked off.
Yeah.
Oh, that hurt.
Yeah, it really.
Curiosity!
Well, that was the point.
Yeah.
Very much an homage to Ray Harryhausen.
But, and we're talking, you know, there's actually. I guess this is the second fake out here that I fell for.
Mm-hmm.
I was totally in the moment with.
I like the way they portray this beat in the after of this in the book.
Oh yeah.
Actually,
yeah.
You know,
it's a pretty good fake out in the book.
Yeah, it's a really good fake out in the book. Because they
you completely forgot
linger on it a little longer in the book.
You completely forgotten that he has those mutual vests on.
Yeah. But I mean, in the book, it's like they go out, they're out Balin's tomb,
right,
on their way out to Brit. Wait a minute. I can't remember how. Or is it after they get out of Moria? I think it's after they get out of Moria until the. When they finally check on Frodo's wounds and see the meatball vest, if I remember correctly.
Are you sure? I thought it played pretty faithfully to the book. I thought, you know, they check to see if, you know, he's dead. And then they discover that they have a vest on.
I don't remember. I thought.
Because I thought this scene that we're seeing right here, where he's checking on Frodo. Is exactly in the book. I thought. I mean, I don't remember quite. But this line where he says that would obscure the boar or whatever, I thought that was somewhat in the book. No, I'm not quite sure they were involved soon. So. Mm-hmm. You think you have a couple of broken ribs? You think my boy has a little trouble breathing? Yeah.
Bum 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 bum. Yeah, run.
Yeah. This scene is just astonishing.
Yeah, this scene is a lot better even in the film than it is in the book.
Oh my god, I love this. Love all the goblins and orcs just, and you've got that sweeping track shot.
This is one of my favorite parts of the cast commentary is John Rhys Davies saying, you know, well, you just have to listen to the cast commentary because
yeah, it is that they're just on the outskirts of Lorien Forest.
Oh, really?
When they find the meat world vest.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Because they completely... I think it was...
They don't think Frodo's dead the entire time, though, do they?
No, they just forget about the wound because of so much happening with Khazad Dûm and the Balrog and stuff.
Okay.
That they just completely forget that.
Gotcha.
Yeah. I love this little satisfaction on John Reese Davies' face.
Yeah, that's what I was mentioning, is that, you know, you really do have to listen to Kaz's commentary to, like, get as good of a chuckle out of it as I do.
Mm-hmm. Oh, shit.
This is new temporary.
But, yeah, this happens much differently than it does in the book. You don't have this prolonged action sequence on the bridge. But
well, yeah, and according to...
And they acknowledge that. In that the I can't remember who was designed the bridge. I think it was either Alan Lee or John Howe designed the bridge and for like conceptual drawings, and they had that gap in there. Like they basically decided to do an entire action sequence around that gap.
Right.
So
well, not the bridge, the stairs.
The stairs. That's right, yeah. Sorry. For some reason, I always think of the entire thing as the bridge. But
this is some dwarvish choral music, yeah. It's just a real testament to the score.
Mm-hmm. Not given its due credit on the soundtrack album.
Not as much as it should have.
Not as much, but still pretty effective on the soundtrack album.
Really interesting way to build suspense.
Yeah.
That's what I can't wait for me.
Oh.
What's it called?
You got that shot in Pearl Harbor with the bombs pointing.
That turned the
phrase dwarves, okay? This is very much like Saving Private Ryan, if you think. Sort of some of those camera shots of the higher camera shots of the goblin spiraling down sort of reminds me of some of the shots in the D-Day sequence of Saving Private Ryan.
So this sequence is nowhere near being a part of the book.
Oh no, I mean the actual going down the stairs is actually much shorter.
Right.
And it's, I mean, the bridge with the Balrog is basically the key, the main thing with this sequence.
Yep.
The moments between Aragorn and Frodo are few and far between, but anytime it's just them on the screen, I really do enjoy it.
Well, it's really interesting, and I mean, you know, they really do a good job of sort of building it in those few scenes, the kinship between those two, because both of them have tremendous responsibilities in this story. So it's really a good job of what they do in here.
This creature, I think it looks great. I think it's really well done. He just seems to be quite up to ILM standards in some respects. But
Can anyone really see ILM envisioning the Balrog like this now.
Probably not.
I cannot see,
you know. I mean, seriously, I mean, this is just a testament to Weta.
Yeah.
The way they envisioned this creature. I mean, I can't see ILM doing it this way.
Well, I mean, I think they did make it look as good, but it wouldn't look as like that.
No, it wouldn't look nearly as ingenious as this, but I mean, you want to talk quality, you know, ILM is probably, it's not up to the snuff of ILM, but I mean, when you want to talk
just sheer imagination,
yeah,
I think this is probably more impressive than what they should do. A hell of a lot better than it is in the anime film. The Balrog in the anime film is a joke. I mean, he's like the same height as Gandalf.
Oh, yeah. Really?
It's like he's got the wings and stuff like that, but I mean, he just doesn't look menacing at all.
Yeah,
he really looks like something out of a Harryhausen movie. You know, and no disrespect to Harryhausen. Actually, sorry, a poor Harryhausen movie. I certainly think Harryhausen.
But it wasn't a.
Come up with something closer to what Peter Jackson did for the Balrog than what the animated film did, but.
I absolutely adore the fact that this was the way Two Towers was opened up.
That was brilliant.
That was a great way to open it.
I mean, that was just
Robert James over there.
Mm-hmm. And you see it as almost as if it's Frodo's dream.
Mm-hmm.
Him saying. Now, Frodo's Elijah's acting there just kills me. Every time I saw it, it really is, an arrow through the chest when you hear that. It's just pure pain and agony. And the look he has in this one moment, it's truly haunting.
It is really good.
Mm-hmm. You really feel the weight of this loss.
You need to cut that out, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Now, elves aren't altogether familiar with immortality, are they?
Which is something they acknowledge in the commentary, and it's like, it's a nice touch to have, because they are immortal. They aren't familiar with death, so when you first see death, how do you deal with it? I mean, it's very hard to deal with. I love this music. Oh, love this music.
I just love Viggo Mortensen's performance in this scene, just because, you know, he...
I like his little moment with Sam. On your feet, Sam. I guess, I don't know, or something about that.
Well, the fact that
Frodo's.
Yeah. Well, the fact that Aragorn's so reflective of what's happened, even though he knows he has to keep the Fellowship moving.
Yeah.
That's what makes that scene so powerful.
But oh god, I mean that shell shot on Elijah's face in that scene is just brilliant. Here we have some pretty big changes in the extended edition that actually make it more faithful to the book.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is very much the way that the book depicts them entering Lothlórien, except that actually in the book they're blindfolded. They're forced to wear blindfolds. Love the use of, sort of sounds like an electric cello or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
give it that ethereal sound to the music. And, you know, one of the things that you actually get the feeling of in the book is Gollum following them.
Right.
Because you do see, because you do get a, you do get glimpses of him following the Fellowship in the Mandalorian.
One of my, another favorite moment of mine from the cast commentary is Orlando Bloom talking about John Rhys Davies trying to get that line, that one line right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm aware of that thing.
What? I know. I'm sorry. I'll just leave the ring, okay?
Yeah, this Elvish, this, I mean, the fact that it was pretty much invented by, you know, I mean, it's I don't know, it just gets me every time. The fact that it was developed by one person, one man, and just, you know, the depth behind it, and the history behind the language, even though there is absolutely no history behind it.
I like that little moment with Boromir, what Boromir says to Frodo, really shows that he does really care about Frodo. You really see that there is some good in him, despite, in spite of what he's sort of destined to do later on, in ways, what we've seen from him earlier.
I mean, under any other conventional film, this sequence would have thrown the momentum off.
Yeah,
a little bit. You know, you just you have this phenomenal action sequence and a real, you know, profound moment in the story with the with the loss of Gandalf, and then you go from that. Usually, you know, I mean, usually you would go straight from that to blowing up the Death Star.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I mean, I don't know, that's not really a good, I personally don't agree with that, comparison, because I do think that the death of Obi-Wan in Star Wars is given proper due, although we could talk about that in an episode 4 concert, but,
the scene where she's like communicating telepathically with Frodo, isn't that in the book somehow?
In some I form? Believe it is.
Yeah, there's some type of something in
it. I believe it is. I'm pretty sure it is, yeah. Because I do remember this scene.
Right.
This scene is pretty faithful to the book, if I remember correctly.
Yes, what I mean about.
Mm-hmm.